In April 2000, I started hiking in to Annapurna at 26,545 feet, the 10th highest mountain in the world. My three teammates were all veteran climbers. Neil Beidelman, an aerospace engineer from Aspen, had been with me on K2 in 1992. An exceptionally strong climber, he probably would have made the summit that year, except that job pressures forced him to return to the States before we could get in position to go for the top. Neil recommended Michael Kennedy, with whom he'd done a lot of routes around Aspen. I'd never climbed with Michael, but I'd met and liked him. He'd never been on an 8,000-meter peak, but I had the highest respect for his amazing climbs in Alaska and the Karakoram. I also knew him as the longtime editor of Climbing, a magazine he'd single-handedly turned into perhaps the best mountaineering journal in the world. My Finnish friend, Veikka Gustafsson, was fast becoming my favorite partner in the Himalaya. Annapurna in 2000 was our sixth expedition together. Eventually, we'd pair up on no fewer than 11 attempts on 8,000-meter peaks. By the spring of 2000, I'd been going after those 8,000ers for 13 years straight, since my first attempt on Everest in 1987. Annapurna was, in fact, my 23rd such expedition, during which I'd reached the summits of 10 of the 14 highest mountains in the world without using supplemental oxygen. Since 1994, I'd decided to go for all 14, a goal I'd originally thought was far beyond my grasp or means. Now that I had the support of sponsors and a modicum of celebrity, I could seriously devote my life to what I called Endeavor 8000, my campaign to stand on top of all 14. That in doing so I might become the first American to accomplish the feat never had more than a secondary importance to me. It was first and foremost a personal quest, to test my skills and endurance against the highest and some of the hardest mountains on Earth. I was 40 years old that spring. I've always been a conservative climber, but by 2000, I had added reasons why it made sense to be cautious in the big ranges. In my 20s, when I had set out on my first expeditions to 8,000ers, I was single, so I didn't have the responsibilities and commitments that I started to accumulate as I got older. I was completely focused on my climbing and on figuring out how to scratch out a living at the same time. By 2000, however, I was married to Paula, whom I'd met and fallen in love with 6 years before. Now we had a 2-year-old son, Gil, and as I left for Annapurna, Paula was 6 months pregnant with our second child. Ella would be born on June 25th. Of course, Paula worried about my going off on expeditions, and I could no longer nurse that clean-cut conviction that exposing myself to danger on a big mountain was entirely my own concern. Paula saw how diligently I trained and prepared for each expedition, and she always trusted that I would make prudent decisions, but we both understood that on an 8,000er, I could never completely eliminate the element of risk. For Annapurna, I took along a satellite phone, with which I promised to call her as often as I could. My choice of teammates was hardly accidental. As my regular partner, Veikka was a shoe-in. Like me, Michael and Neil were married and had kids. All three of them were mature, seasoned mountaineers. Michael, who would turn 48 on the trip, was almost a decade older than I. Veikka and I had decided that to tackle Annapurna, we wanted a strong team of four rather than our usual team of two. I figured I could count on Neil's and Michael's judgment and expertise to help keep all of us safe. As I wrote in my diary on March 30th, our very first day in Nepal, "Excited to check out Annapurna, but will be very wary and cautious about the ascent. I know the four of us are all very conservative and will always shy away from anything that is not acceptable risk.